buying time. It seems like a century ago since we last talked.
I know, because so much has happened between now and then. And, of course, overnight, last evening, we learned about 59 Tomahawk missiles launched. Last I read, we had two destroyers in the eastern Mediterranean. So they're engaged in Syria in retribution for the chemical attack, while Donald Trump calls it a matter of national security.
Yeah, I'm still sorting through this. I've been through this before with President Obama, and I want to stay, intellectually consistent. And so I've been thinking a lot about it today. You know, the president had the president of Egypt and the king of Jordan in D.C. this week. I wish that, and maybe I'm sure in international affairs and talks, people were called, friends were identified as far as the Arab world. But when is it that the Arab League's going to speak out? When's the UN going to take a position? I think people want to strike out in retribution for the horror of those photos of those kids and the adults that were gassed. And I get that. But are we the only ones that are horrified by that?
Are we the only ones with the testicular fortitude who are horrified to do something about it?
Well, I think, or do they just turn for us and say, okay, you punch them back, because, one, we can't do it militarily, and two, we're their neighbors and we don't want to get involved.
Do you think it's an inherent fear of Russia that causes the other countries to balk because they're not on at least some kind of equal playing field with the other player in the arena?
I'm not. Could be. I mean, they want to play both sides, but also they're still Arabs. I mean, you don't want to call them into one ethnic group or enclave, but they still believe that's their region, their ethnicity, their pseudo type brothers, and I'm just disappointed that you couldn't get a UN resolution and you couldn't get these other countries to stand up and say, yeah, we're behind this. We want to encourage this. I think I wrote a column when President Obama, and I think my call was the same thing. Where's the international outrage and where is the unity of the world to do something about this?
But when some people say, Congressman, that when an offense like this is committed, we sit around and we talk about it till the impetus is gone to act, and that when a dog makes a mess on the carpet, you teach him the lesson right then, or he doesn't associate the bad thing with the good thing. And that
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. Swift action, showing strength, and I think the world community is going to be looking at this as a resurgence of U.S. might. But again, I don't know why. I think the UN Security Council met last night before the attacks. They were talking. It doesn't have. They could be swift. They could be swift on something that was so obviously with media today, so inherently wrong, and against all norms of civilized societies.
Right, but there's another issue here, and that is that nothing was done. And you, when you look at the recent interviews done with the Saudi foreign minister, which were last week, talking about the damage that was done in the Middle East by President Obama failing to honor his own commitments about a red line that cannot be crossed, that we here in the United States did not report very well on that very often, but there was a long lingering effect to many friends in the Middle East that say, look, you guys made a commitment and you didn't do it, and that this may reestablish us in that arena as someone who will take action. And when you look at this, you can explain why Israel is the only country they immediately take action, and that's a policy that they've had for a number of years. And that maybe in this arena, with that cultural makeup, immediate retribution in that cultural sense is effective.
Well, then we need to hear them speak up and say they support the strikes.
Yeah. Hey, the health care bill, is it dead? It's not dead. Is the Freedom Caucus the only thing that's stopping it, or is it a bad product, John?
Oh, no, it's a great product. I don't have enough time to go through all the great aspects of it, but it's very confusing and difficult because it's just not a straight and up and down bill on repealing and replacing the health care law. It's using a process called reconciliation because, yeah, we could vote to repeal and replace Obamacare, but we can't get 60 votes in the Senate to do that. So we have to use this budget process called reconciliation, which constrains us to some of the reforms that some people have liked. So, you know, the fights have really been about tinkering about how do you get some of these additional reforms while keeping it under the reconciliation instructions. That's kind of basic, you know, the basic aspect. This addresses Medicaid and Medicaid expansion, and really it also addresses our $20 trillion in debt. You know, sometimes people forget that have a $20 trillion debt. I don't think that should be just cast by the wayside. This had left unchanged, it would have addressed our debt and cut our debt by $880 billion. It would have reduced deficit payments by $380 billion. And what we really want to do, and you talk to these folks all the time, is we really want to improve the individual market, which is collapsed. Yep. I mean, people are being forced by law to buy something that they can't use. Yep. They got high premiums. They have high copays. They have high deductibles. So and I've been to a lot of dinners and speeches, and I ask people to raise their hands. And usually in a group of 100, 120 people, when I get down to how you got insurance, there's about 7 to 10 who have insurance on the individual market. They are crying out for help, and that's really the major focus of this.
Obamacare, Aetna Insurance announcing yesterday they're pulling out of Iowa just days after Wellmark Blue Cross Blue Shield announced they were leaving the marketplace. Some people say the Republicans should let this bill implode. You and I both know that would be devastating for the people in the receiving end of the coverage, even though it is terrible coverage, at least it's coverage. And seeing some people saying, well, let the Democrats, let them go down on their own ship, and then let's come to the rescue. And then you say, look what we do if we do that. But on the other hand, if the Republicans go in, try to fix it, and it's still a mess, then suddenly Obamacare becomes a Republican liability.
Yeah, but I think you hit it on the first part of the, as you set up the question, is that do we really want to penalize people for because they can't buy insurance because there's no insurance available?
Right.
I mean, do we really want to? And then how do, if they have a medical event, do we really want to say, well, there's no coverage? It's just going to be a compassionate care by the healthcare sector. And, you know, the other huge dilemma that those of us in Illinois have is the state's Medicaid problem is so bankrupt that, you know, we not only have the federal portion of this that's tough, but our state doesn't have its act together. And so these healthcare providers who are great, you know, citizens and compassionate care and doing things for the right, they're looking for someone to turn to help them. But the federal government is not going to bail out Illinois because Illinois bankrupt itself.
Right. You know, and I'm still waiting to hear what the thought is on Medicaid out of Springfield, because, I mean, when Pat Quinn was governor in Obamacare, he went all in with the state of Illinois. Hey, we're almost running out of time, and I want to do this before I let you go today. Here in Illinois, they're working on the Trust Act, creating a sanctuary status in the state of Illinois that if this law passes, Illinois law enforcement agencies will be told not to cooperate with federal authorities unless they have a warrant. Now, the same day that the John Cullerton came out and said, I'm in favor of the Trust Act, we should do this, which is create a sanctuary city for the state of Illinois, the entire state, the Attorney General, Lisa Madigan, issues a press release saying the federal government isn't following the law and I'm going to sue them. The duplicity of that has me so up on the balls of my feet. I'm going, look, you one minute you say we're refusing to follow federal law. We're not going to do it. While at the same time saying you're no good son of a for not doing it. I leaves me confused.
All I would say is maybe if Illinois continues to move in that direction, then we'll save some federal dollars by blocking any federal dollars to the state of Illinois.
Yikes. Right. And so, at this time, I mean, what does that
kind
mean?
Of the road we're on, and if they want to play that game, I think the events of last night probably show that this is a very serious president.
And that brinkmanship.
Let them play their political games, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but brinkmanship seems to be where we're at in so many things, and I would hold up Gorsuch as one of those illustrations of my point. Brinkmanship seems to be all around us, saber rattling, threatening, baring of teeth on almost every single subject. It is so adversarial. It's so visceral.
Yeah, it's tough times.
And they've been on.
We volunteer for it.
Yeah, they've been on you pretty hard, John.
Oh, they are a small percentage of the 730,000 people that I represent. Actually, most of them are running for my district, so I don't. When you're in the right, you don't worry about the naysayers.
Briefly, John, before I let you go, the executive order, coal for your district, Saline County, Gallatin County, Pope County. I know there's not a lot of coal mines down in the Deep South, but there are a number of people in your district coal mining. Do you think that this will have a real impact and viability, and maybe some of those folks will see their jobs return of the some 1,000 people that have lost their jobs in the last 2 years?
I always say that the president's involvement in this debate on energy and will stop the bleeding. I'm not sure you're going to see thousands come back.
News Radio WJPF Congressman John Chimkas. John, could you hold tight for just a split second, sir?
Yes, sir.
732 News Radio WJPF, and as always, thanks for your time, Congressman. It's 732 on the way. Your next look at news at 736. Weather officials confirm it.